Bear Down Bears fans, another edition of the Chicago Bears podcast coming your way. We got to hear from Ryan Poles and Courtney Cronin, of course, is still in the building, as you can see on the YouTube side. Always finds the best backgrounds up at Hallis. So keeping it fresh on the video side and always giving us the great insight from Hallis Hall. Courtney, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. We're 2 days away from the draft, so you can tell there's like a palpable sense of excitement here at Hallis Hall. We were here this morning at the beginning for the Brian Piccolo Award, which there's a rookie winner and then there's a veteran winner. So TJ Edwards got the veteran winner nomination and honor, and then Darnell Wright got the rookie honor. So it was cool. I mean, even then, like when there's about 100 people packed into a room to celebrate that award, this happens every single year and it's right before the draft, but there's like a different sense of excitement around this team right now that's headed in, you know, a complete, like the outlook of this team, like at the onset of Thursday, is going to feel very different. I feel by the time this thing is over and there are either one or two draft picks, two as of right now, unless they're able to maneuver on Thursday night, but it's an exciting time. And there's, you know, no shortage of things going on around this team too. Ahead of the draft.
I mean, listen, we got Ryan Poles. This felt like the press conference that, of course, he had to do. We hear from him and Ian Cunningham today. But I thought maybe there were some interesting nuggets that we could talk about on what we heard from him, especially with his draft process. I thought he dropped some very good things on kind of how he's gone about going through this draft. One part that I thought was very exciting is that he's not just sitting in a room of yes men. He really brought that up, talking about how Ian Cunningham's a part of it. So a lot to get into. Hit that like button, subscribe to the page, leave that 5-star review. Y'all know what to do. Also want to let you know that this episode's brought to you by the Hard Rock Casino in Northern Indiana, Las Vegas style gaming, just 30 minutes from Soldier Field, exit 6, right off of I-80-94. All right, Courtney, let's start here, right? Because you were in the room, you got to kind of hear from Ryan Poles about, you know, a bunch of different things that he talked about in his pre-draft process. And I think that one that we heard from him about kind of how he went through his top 30 visits. Went through it a little bit different than most teams have gone through in the past, especially with how he attacked the quarterback position. What'd you hear from Ryan Poles on just kind of how he maybe is changing up how things have been done in the past with how he did those top 30 visits?
It was the final piece of their evaluation, like the last puzzle piece to fit to make sure, okay, Caleb Williams is our guy. We're going all in on drafting a new quarterback at number one overall. And yes, I know he stopped just shy of saying that Caleb Williams is going to be a Bear. I know you want to keep the intrigue. I mean, as we've talked about, they could sign him right now if they wanted to. They technically don't have to wait until Thursday. Yeah. But even Poles was like, you know, you got to keep some of the you know, intrigue, the drama, whatever word he used, going. So I guess, yeah, we'll just have to wait. It'll be the longest 10 minutes and the quickest time for them to turn that card into New York to make sure that they're, you know, all the pick and everything.
Who was it that asked, like, hey, did the league tell you not to say anything? Because I think we all know it at this point.
Yeah, and he said that that's like, it's his prerogative, that he hasn't been told by the NFL to, you know, don't say anything, make sure that you keep all the eyeballs on our product on Thursday night. Well, all the eyes are going to be on the NFL draft regardless. It always does numbers. But I get it. Like, if there was any sort of nudge from behind the scenes in the NFL of being like, no, look, we know what you're about to do. Like, it's pretty obvious, and it has been obvious for months now where this thing is going. I think the league would really not be happy if the Bears ended up kind of circumventing their process and then the draft started number two overall. I do think there's a lot of drama with the number two overall pick. We think it's Jaden Daniels, but regardless, like, it wouldn't be a draft sans drama. Nonetheless, the Bears are keeping it allegedly close to the vest, even though we know what they're doing. But no, I think what he did divulge today in telling us about that pre-draft visit with Caleb Williams. So that took place, that he was in Hallis Hall on April 3rd. So the dinner was the 2nd of April at Sophia Steak in Lake Forest. It kind of, from the way that he described it, having veteran players here, certain players that he really wanted to get in front of Caleb Williams, but also understanding that at this time of year, he's got to be respectful of players' schedules. That, you know, a lot of guys go and train different places, but there was a nice contingent of players like Cole Kmet, DJ Moore, TJ Edwards that stay around here that were available for that dinner and to spend some time with the guy that's going to be their quarterback. It reminds me a lot of the recruiting visits that I used to cover when I covered, you know, prep sports and recruiting, where they would bring prospective, you know, whether it's a JUCO guy transferring in, whether it's a high school five-star athlete coming on to a campus on an official visit, they would have a weekend set up to where those players not only got to meet with the coaching staff, but also got to interact with guys that would eventually be their teammates. This carried that same sort of vibe, and it's unique because we don't typically see this happening during top 30s. Like, there are times during the free agent process where free agents will, you know, they'll have a chance to interact with current players on a different team, and that's part of the overall recruiting process. But you just don't typically see it with guys who are coming out of college and about to be rookies in the NFL. But I think you can really appreciate what the Bears' process has been throughout this entire thing. They have not left any stone unturned. They've done their homework, and there are people who will still say, well, they only brought one quarterback in on a top 30. A, that doesn't mean that there weren't ways to go about getting the information on other top quarterback prospects, which I asked Ryan Poles about, and he said that there's other ways for them to do that. There were other players, not necessarily just quarterbacks, but other players who are high up on their draft board that didn't come in for top 30s that they would feel very comfortable in drafting. So there's that, but I also think it really solidified the commitment to know, like, let's not overcomplicate this. Caleb Williams is our guy, even though they won't say it just yet, but yeah. Caleb Williams is our guy, and we don't need to convolute this by thinking, oh, well, what if we looked at Drake May a little bit more closely? What if we looked at Jaden Daniels? Like, if you know what you're going to do, be convicted in your judgment there and stick with it. And ultimately, that's the route that they went, pouring all of these resources into one quarterback prospect from the time they went out to his pro day in Los Angeles to what they were able to do in and around Hallis Hall, and having current players sign off that this is a player that they think is the right fit for the culture of this team.
When you pair up kind of how the Bears have attacked this top 30 visit with Caleb Williams and how you hear Caleb Williams talk, right? How we've heard him talk the entire time about my goal is to be the number one overall pick. And unless the Bears were willing to trade that, he was going to be the number one overall pick, right? That the Chicago Bears own. How is Ryan Poles dealing with kind of that, where Caleb, you see him on the Pivot podcast, and he's talking about becoming a Chicago Bear, and he always throws in there, right, like, if they pick me.
Yeah.
But he's talking about it like he's been in Chicago for 3 weeks already. How's Ryan kind of dealing with that in this Bears front office?
I don't know if I've seen a draft prospect that has not been drafted by a team just yet talked about in this open of a manner by the people who are going to ultimately be responsible for drafting him, and the player himself speaking in a way that is so, like, it's so obvious where he's headed. You usually don't see that during the draft. And there's the obvious reason that's the case is because they have the number one overall pick. They control how the draft order goes. And on top of that, he's the top rated prospect in this draft class. It's not as if he's, you know, a quarterback from the 2022 class or even 2023. He's labeled, as much as we throw this term around too often, he's labeled as a generational talent, as a can't miss prospect. You've seen every article that's come out over the last, you know, 4 months leading into this draft process puts him in a rare category that you don't see every single year from how these draft prospects are labeled and how they're talked about. So because it feels like such a sure thing, the Bears are talking about it like that. Caleb Williams is talking about it like that. It's a mere formality at this point that by the time they get on the clock Thursday, they're just waiting to do what we already know what they're going to do. And I find that really interesting. And I do wonder, in the era of NIL and where players now, you know, can stay in college a little bit longer if they want to capitalize on that. You know, we're seeing fewer underclassmen head to the draft because of, I believe it's 58 this year, because of what we've seen of, like, how the landscape has changed. But maybe I'm wrong on that, but I just feel like that's kind of changing the way that teams are talking about these prospects and making it not seem like it's such a state secret when you are really convicted about someone. Now, if they had the number two overall pick and there were options there that weren't just like dead set on one guy, might they be handling it in a different way? Sure. But they don't have to go through the rigmarole of, oh, like, let's put up, like, you know, let's put up this front. Like, we're not going to draft Caleb Williams. Like, they're handling it in a way without like going as far as telling you 2 days before the draft they're drafting him, that they're drafting him. And to your point on like, Ryan Poles was asked about some of the really lofty goals that Caleb Williams is setting for himself and how that's perceived by the Bears. And Poles said, like, you know, the PC or the, I guess, yeah, the way that this typically would be handled, if it was any other prospect, you'd say something like, oh, I wasn't sure what he said. Like, I'm unaware of what he's talked about. Like, I'm not going to get into specifics on a certain prospect. Instead, Poles said, no, like, I love that. We should all have huge goals for ourselves. The Bears, under his leadership, have huge goals for this franchise to win multiple championships. And that's, you know, that's helped guide their decision making. He said that it makes them a more intentional franchise when they have goals like that, that you align what your priorities are. And having a quarterback that thinks the same way is probably what you'd want. That's like a dream scenario of having somebody coming in that you have to make sure that you're on the same level with in terms of what you can deliver as a franchise and what this player is coming in here to do. Now, obviously, it's a two-way street. Like, the team has to uphold its end of the bargain, and so does Caleb Williams. But I thought just the way that he's talked about, like, we've talked about Caleb in so many different ways that is just so much more open than we typically have when it comes to these prospects before they're drafted. Usually we learn, like Darnell Wright last year, we didn't know about that private workout that they had until after he was drafted. Like, the Bears weren't telling us about that in the pre-draft process. That wasn't leaking and getting out there in the days leading into the draft because we didn't know, we didn't know they weren't going to stay at 9 until that night. And we didn't know, like, who, you know, there were multiple prospects that could have fallen that were within their range that they could have drafted. So it's unique in that sense, the way that they're already talking about him and already, like, you know, speaking highly of somebody who hasn't even stepped foot into this building as an official member of the team yet.
Right. No. And I think it's almost as if I heard there's one thing that I heard today. Cause again, I felt like most of this press conference was the formality of they tell me I have to do these things. I'm going to let you guys ask your questions, but we're going into the draft with at least some vague terms as far as 9, what they're going to do with the pick and stuff like that, right? We're not going to be giving you trade secrets. But I did thought he offered an olive branch kind of to the fans who are still on the fence. And I think he was very intentional with this when he talked about Caleb Williams, saying he's really an intelligent guy, came across as a really good teammate, easy to talk to, down to earth, talked through the process about the whole Hollywood thing. He's all ball. Do you feel like that was kind of to the fans who have been on the other side of the fence where I was at one point, and then you start to find some things out about him. You're like, all right, this guy might be the answer of, hey, this guy's all serious. He's all ball. You're not going to have any of those issues that you were thinking may have been issues because this is what people have told you were issues.
Yeah.
You're going to be fine.
I think it's addressing the perception around the quarterback and around Caleb Williams without feeding into the speculation that of all of the things that are out there and not necessarily going about it. Like he's done this. Like I remember going back to owners meetings when I had a conversation with him about what he had hoped to glean from the USC pro day in the time that he spent up until like they had the 2 days before the pro day. And then it was pro day on Wednesday. Like, what did you hope to learn? And one thing with him was accountability. And how he, you know, because there was a lot out there about, you know, Caleb Williams and like the emotion that he showed and crying after that loss and what that means about like, all right, is that on me? How am I treating my teammates in those moments? Like, and I think, you know, for Poles to speak about that as openly as he did about certain things, like the final boxes he needed to have checked. I just want to know how you are as a competitor, and I want to know how you are about taking accountability for what things that you do well, things that you need to work on, and how that works within the context of this team. Because the last thing you want to do is bring somebody in that you think is going to act one way, and then they go about their business in a completely different manner. And this was around the time, remember Jalen Johnson went on the Up and Adams show, and he said that thing about, like, you know, don't bring any of this Hollywood stuff into the locker room. And he said it tongue in cheek. Like, he didn't mean it in a way that, you know, came across as, I would say, like, you know, he didn't mean it in, like, a negative way. I'm actually trying to, like, find.
Like, you're not going to win over the locker room if you come in here with all that. Yeah.
Like, he meant it in a way that, you know, I think really, like, that's a question that a lot of guys on this team have. And that was addressed, according to polls, you know, during the dinner. Like, that's the reason that Ryan Poles mentioned that, like, you know, the Hollywood stuff was brought up, because there's this perception around Caleb Williams that he's entitled, that he has had things, not, I mean, I don't want to use the word handed to him, but that he's lived a life as a pro while he was already in college, and that he's going to walk into a locker room where he still has to earn the respect no matter how high he's drafted, like that he's going to walk in a certain way that makes it feel like he's already arrived without doing the work. And I think that Ryan Poles addressing that part without going into every single rumor that's, you know, come out there about the quarterback was one way of being like, yeah, we know what's being said about him. Like, we know what the perception is. And if the players that are currently on this team, the guys that he says are his leaders, are the ones who signed off on this and said, no, we think he's a really good teammate, we think we see how much he wants to win, we see his competitive spirit, all of those things, then the buck ultimately stops with the guys who have to share a locker room with him. So I thought the way he's addressed it and the way he, like, continues to talk about him has been really transparent, which typically you just don't see in the pre-draft process for a lot of different reasons.
Yeah, it's been weird. Like, it, like, I've literally said, this is one of the more, it reminds me of when they brought back Jurassic Park, and, like, the best kept secret for an hour and 20 minutes of the movie was, like, they mixed the dinosaur with Velociraptor, and everybody's sitting there like, oh, we waited this long to tell us that, we knew that an hour ago. Like, that's kind of how this feels at this point. Mm-hmm. And I do love the fact that it's like, I don't know if you've seen that meme of him from, like, the Pat McAfee show where he's like, he's got, like, the this guy going on, right? Like, that's what all of this feels like. Whatever he's asked about Caleb, it's like, I don't know. What if we took somebody else? You never know what's going to happen. Yeah. So it's just, it's one of the foregone conclusions, I think, of this draft. It feels like a lock. I think the world would be shocked if they did anything else at this point. I do want to get into our road to the draft here, though, brought to you by Toyota. Toyota, let's go places, because outside of one, there are a million questions for Chicago Bears fans. And what did you hear today from Ryan Poles, kind of just about where he feels he needs to go with maybe this number 9 pick for sure, but kind of just adding more in the draft? Is he content with where he's at right now with the picks that he has, which I believe are the fewest this franchise has ever come into a draft with? Or is there a feeling that, you know, maybe he does what he's done in his previous two drafts of adding more?
Mm-hmm. He said that he's comfortable, like, asked directly about that. He's comfortable with where this team is at, that he doesn't feel he has to add picks. And you can believe that that's just like, oh, that's pre-draft fodder. That's keeping your cards close to the vest and not trying to reveal anything, because you don't want a team to try to drive the price up on you if indeed you were trying to trade up. We're trying to trade down. But I think that there's a lot of truth to that, because, like, in the first year of the draft, they had, you know, it's a double digit draft class. I believe it was 10 or 11.
Yeah.
And even in last year was another double digit draft class. In a lot of ways, they were just trying to fill out a roster. I mean, look at, like, the players that they drafted. And guys, I mean, certainly the players that they've drafted that are cornerstone pieces of this franchise, everybody from Jaquan Brisker and Kyler Gordon 2 years ago to Darnell Wright. And I know that there are plenty of others, but, like, they've definitely hit on a lot of draft picks that it doesn't, you don't need to use the draft in the same way that you might have in previous years and even college free agency just to fill out a roster and field a team.
Right.
They've built this thing to a point now that, you know, I thought what Poles said today was, it's true. Like, it's going to be harder to make this team than it was in years past. And when you only have four draft picks, fewer bites at the apple. You do have to be more strategic with the guys that you're going to take a flyer on, the guys that you consider projects, the guys that you like, whether that's at 9, whether that's at 75 or 122. If they can't find a way to move, they're not just going to move for the sake of moving, but they have to find the happy medium between, we've got 4 draft picks, we know what we're using one of them on, like dead set on that. Can those other 3 positions that they've mentioned at multiple junctures this offseason, wide receiver, offensive line, and pass rusher, can you find people who create an immediate impact at those positions? And the way that they see it, this draft is setting them up to do that as early as 9 with that second first round pick. And I know that there's a report out there like it's kind of like common sense. Like what the league thinks the Bears are going to do at number 9 is trade back, because you're looking at history, that you have a general manager who was brought up through this college scouting process. He has made multiple draft day trades in the last 2 years. It's kind of his MO. So the league thinks that, coupled with the fact that they have 4 draft picks, they already have a very expensive draft pick coming in at 1, and you still have other holes on this roster to fill out. That's the reason that the perception around the Bears on Thursday night, after we get through watching them draft Caleb Williams, is that they're going to try to be active and picking up the phone to move back. Like there's no doubt in my mind that they will field calls at some point. It's not like Pohl saying, no, I'm comfortable with where we're at means that he won't be active, but they're not desperate for it this year, the way that maybe it would have felt in previous years had they only had this much draft capital when he and Matt Eberflus and their staff were just starting out.
Yeah, and I thought when he said, right, that the nice thing about this whole process is he feels pretty good about just being able to be flexible at that position.
Because they weren't able to do that in previous years. I mean, even, you know, last year, sort of. Like last year, they, you know, to move back one spot to pick up an additional 4th-round pick, which is, you know, that's a 4th-round pick that they're using this year at 122. To do that gave them, it's like all of those things were the steps that got them to this point where they now have 4 picks to use in a couple of days.
Yeah. My question off of that is, do you feel like with Ryan Poles and how he's talking about everything, right, coming into this draft, that he believes that there are pieces that he has to come away with in this draft outside of course, Caleb Williams? But does it feel to him, or I guess feel to you from what he's saying, that he feels like if I come out of here and I don't get a left tackle, we might be in trouble. If I don't get a defensive end, things are not going to go well.
Well, he didn't say anything directly to that other than, you know, at 9, like you got to look at this as a rare opportunity, because in reality, you don't want to be drafting in the top 10, because that means you had one of the 10 worst records in the NFL. Like in years where they believe that they're going to like take the next step, a lot of that's going to be, you know, taking them out of contention. If that goal comes to fruition where they can like meet it or exceed it, that means they're going to be drafting in the later part of the first round or any other round, because that means that they will have had a better record and they don't get that first crack at the top players in the draft class. So I think that they have to look at that and realize the opportunity that's there at 9 to get a franchise altering player, somebody who is the short term and immediate term and immediate answer, short term and long term answer at any of those 3 positions. Yeah. And you can make a good case for any of them. And for Poles and his staff, that's one of those can't miss picks. Like, you know, you could, if you're sitting there at 9 and there are 1 or 2 players that you are dead set on, you don't think of trading back.
Yeah.
You think of taking that player now, because they're also looking, and this obviously wasn't addressed today, but as part of the evaluation on this year's draft class, they have to start thinking and projecting out, will this position that we are targeting in 2024, what's the strength of it in 2025? What's the strength of it in 2026? I mean, we talk about this with the quarterbacks all the time. If you're a team that desperately needs a quarterback now and maybe a year or two from now, you're going to be looking at the strength of this year's draft class compared to, God, who's coming out next year? Carson Beck, Shedeur Sanders, like the names, at least as of right now, have dwindled. And the strength is so much more prevalent in this year, where that's something else you have to consider at wide receiver, at offensive tackle, at defensive. I mean, let's use wide receiver for an example. I know that it's felt like the norm the last 5 years that you could get a starting caliber receiver day two or even early in day three, but take a look at the depth of last year's class in 2022 as well. Like, it just did not pan out that way. It's cyclical. These things will end up kind of, you know, repeating themselves over time, but like, you have to figure out where you are in your building process to know we can hit pause on this position. We don't need to reach for somebody this year because we feel confident about the strength of next year's group and the picks that we are set to have, versus the opportunity at 9 to take somebody who is going to be part of this group for a long, long time and would be better or just as good as any of the players that you could get at a later date. Like, that has to factor into their overall decision.
Yeah, I think at 9, too, you also have to factor in, he got asked about this.
Fifth-year option, I think, also goes in. I meant to say that, too. Like, that's the extra year that you have for a top 10 draft pick. Like, if that guy pans out, then you're getting that extra year to work with, which then helps you, if you're in a championship window, to be flexible with spending elsewhere in your roster.
No, for sure. And I think, right, like, when you talk about a guy going out and getting a guy at 9 that you feel is the best player at 9 versus a need, he got asked about that. And I thought how he answered that was very interesting when talking about, you know, attacking some of these positions. Are you okay if you're taking the third best wide receiver as he grades out on your board? Or would you rather go out and get the best edge rusher? What did you kind of get the vibe on where early in this draft, there's going to be a host of players to the Bears? The wide receiver answer could get the defensive end answer, could get your tackle answer. Where does it feel like Ryan Poles is most comfortable going, best talent available or more for the need of the team?
Well, I mean, we don't know how many first round grades they have on prospects. Right. They're never going to tell you that right off the bat. Usually I think for most teams, if you were to, like, I don't have the exact number in front of me, but it's usually anywhere from like 15 to 16 guys who have a true first round can't miss grade. And he did say, like, the way that they, you know, look at, like, how being consistent in the way that they label players and trying to find those blue chip prospects is that, you know, they have this bear tag that they put on their guys on their draft board. Like, that's the top bear. So it's based on traits. It's it's the skill set standpoint that these guys have to have certain things that they're looking for. And then, like, other factors, which he said is passion for the game, coachability, dependability, resilience. Those are things that are, like, just non-negotiables when you are using that high of a draft pick on a player. But I think it just comes down to positional value too. That's not something that he necessarily delved into too much today, but if you can find, like, let's take the example of best pass rusher available, because who knows? It doesn't sound like the NFL is going to penalize the Atlanta Falcons. So, you know, it sounds like everything's kind of status quo going into Thursday. They will have the 8th overall pick. They're not getting penalized for tampering. If they go offense and the Bears are sitting there at number 9 and can be the first team to take a defensive player versus taking the third receiver available, which it could very well be Roma Dunze, then they have to weigh the value of not just need, but, like, what's the better bang for your buck, like, kind of in layman's terms, of that position. And that's a really difficult conversation, a difficult decision to make, because I would imagine you're going to get a lot of different answers for which is the better value in terms of longevity, in terms of the finances that are involved with that, and having the opportunity to develop this player and then pay this player if all goes according to plan. So, you know, the flexibility that they have there, if you're thinking that they don't have to come away with a defensive end in round one, then maybe that's what they target in day two, on day two. And maybe even, like, you know, round four, you get a developmental prospect there. But as you pass up on one position? Like, are you comfortable that you're going to have enough depth at certain others? Like at wide receiver, like using that as an example, right now they're comfortable. They've got Keenan Allen, they've got DJ Moore. Are they confident in the depth? Probably not as much as you would hope, but do you have a better chance to hit on somebody, let's say they stay where they are, four picks, to take a wide receiver at 75 versus like taking a receiver at 9? You probably have as good of a chance to get, based on the strength of this draft class, to get a starting caliber or at least like a high ceiling depth guy at that spot than you probably would a defensive end. But they may view it differently. Like, because I mean, in every mock that I've done, and we've got our NFL Nation mock draft on Tuesday night, I picked Roma Dunze because he was sitting there. Because I don't think it's, you know, drafting for, like, every team has a view differently about drafting for need versus drafting for best player available based on where you sit in the draft order. You should really be able to hit on both of those things if you're the Chicago Bears with the number 9 overall pick, which is why, like, they're really in a situation where I don't think they could go wrong. Unless they reached for an offensive lineman. Like, if Joe Alt is gone and they decided that they were going to reach for somebody who may or may not be considered an overdraft there, like, that might get critiqued. But I think that they've those three positions that they've done so much work on, any one of those three could be a really good option for them.
Yeah, if they you know, went with a Troy Fontenot at 9 instead of maybe trading back. I hear what you're saying.
But, like, then again, it's like, do you have a trade partner?
Right.
If the perception around the league is that they're going to be looking to trade back, our team's going to be so desperate to move up and, like, give you future draft capital to get from somewhere in the first round and number 9, that they might not be. That's, you know, they might call your bluff in that, because it feels so obvious that the team wants more draft picks based on how they've done business in the draft. And maybe other teams are like, no, we're going to be good until unless the price is going to drop.
And we've been burned by that this offseason, right? That's kind of how the Justin Fields situation itself played out. Poles thought there was more value out there. The NFL said, we know you're taking Caleb. Let's move on with this. You're getting what you're getting. Figure it out. I thought we heard an interesting position come up, though, when we're talking about this 9th overall pick. And not to say the Bears have to stay here to take this position, but when he talked about interior defensive linemen, he said, generally speaking, I would say the inside guy has the shortest path to the quarterback, and that changes everything. And I think he was being asked about, you know,
Byron Murphy, more or less.
Basically Byron Murphy, but, like, what are you prioritizing here? Mm-hmm. That's kind of a position that we've assumed he was going to stick with Jervon Dexter and or Zach Pickens at, because you just took these guys in the second round last season. Is there a chance that Ryan Poles still feels the need to improve that 3 technique position, which, if you go out and get a Byron Murphy or at least that interior defensive tackle, that would be your 3 technique in this system?
I think you can't rule it out. And I think that he laid out a really good reason for why you'd prioritize that. And what he said was, having that interior rush is probably a preference when you have an outside guy. It makes it really difficult to scheme up. Well, they've got one outside guy in Montez Sweat. It's just a matter of how much are you going to prioritize who's opposite him on the defensive line? Because we saw that he fixed a lot. Like, he was a multiplier. That's a term that they like to use in this building. He was all of those things, but they also needed help. He couldn't do it alone. Yes, he led the team in sacks last year after only being here since week 9, but they still need to upgrade their pass rush, having somebody else play opposite him. So I don't think that you can automatically say, oh, that fits their scenario right now. Like, they've got the outside guy because they only have one. I feel like you can't. And for as much as we talk, like, that's putting cart before the horse, in my opinion, of focusing so heavily on, oh, if Jervon Dexter, if they know that Jervon Dexter is not serviceable this year, or they don't feel confident that he's going to make the jump in the second year. And they've never said anything like that. Like, they've actually said the opposite. Flew said that he expected really big things from Dexter in his second season. And what we saw in terms of the increased snap counts for him and playing time and production over the last, you know, half of the season, more or less, really since that Chargers game, I think that they're going to give him every opportunity to do that. But shoring up the opposite, like the opposite edge rusher spot, just be able to, like, you know, come around. Like, you've got to be able to pressure quarterbacks from the interior and from the outsides. And I just feel like when you take a look at strength of the draft class, it's, you know, the tackle prospects for the defensive tackles are going to be further down in the first round than the edge rushers. But they're both, God, they're both still a need for this team until we get an answer by the end of the draft based on what they do versus what they don't do about how they feel the development of Jarvon Dexter is going. And you remember, like, they brought in, they really focused on that this offseason. Like, Eric Washington, their new defensive coordinator, is known as the guy who develops defensive linemen. Like, he really has worked at that. And made that his MO from his days back in Carolina to his time in Buffalo to where he's at now. He's got a lot of work cut out for him, but the big reason of why he's here is for him to develop those younger guys, the Jarvon Dexters and Zach Pickens. And if they do end up bringing somebody in, developing that guy, but like, he's already got two prospects that they drafted last year with high draft capital that he's got to make sure have every opportunity to develop, so then they can be taking over that position left vacant by Justin Jones and potentially allowing the Bears to go look elsewhere at number nine or look elsewhere for a defensive end or a defensive tackle. Maybe it's one that they prioritize a little bit later, but I still think that you know, unless you can trade back, taking a defensive tackle at nine is probably going to be considered by some to be a reach. And I don't think you'd be wrong in saying that, considering what some of those other best player available also matching the need box would be for this team.
Oh yeah. And listen, we already know there's going to be with any pick that's made, there's going to be like backlash or confusion from some side of the media, the fan base, whatever it is. I remember when the Rams selected Aaron Donald, which is hilarious now, what, almost 12, 13 years later, but how he's too undersized, his arms are too short, he's not quick enough off the ball, he's never going to make it in the NFL game. And I was like, he may be the best interior pass rusher of all time. Like, so you kind of look at situations like that and expect those things to come, but it would seem a little, it would seem like there was room for you to do something else. But I think you brought up a great point before. Mm-hmm. Don't come out of this draft and just say, how do you not trade back there? Somebody has to want to trade up.
Mm-hmm. You have,
and that's a major part of this. You got it takes two to tango. Before we get out of this segment and kind of get into some quick, you know, news that broke on the stadium, stuff like that. Do you feel like, and not to say that this isn't going to work out for Caleb, I'm not saying that at all, but if he doesn't hit the ground running, there may be a little bit of concern that they only did one quarterback evaluation in their top three.
Well, internally, there shouldn't be that concern because they did have every opportunity. If they felt that they really needed to get somebody else in here to make sure that their decision to go with Caleb is the right one by kind of like, I wouldn't say it's confirmation bias, but like by like checking off, making sure
every box.
Yeah, just like checking off every box.
Yeah.
Like, that's going to fall on them if he doesn't pan out. And of course, like, what the expectations are for the team versus what the outside expectations are of, oh, like, you draft this guy number one overall, it just has to be a team that wins 8-9 games next year. Somewhere it's going to fall somewhere right in the middle between what the Bears expect early on and what the fans expect early on. But yeah. It will only come back to like haunt them if one of the other quarterbacks, like a Jaden Daniels or a Drake May or JJ McCarthy,
CJ Stroud.
Yeah. If that happens for another team, combined with if Caleb struggles. But yeah. I thought his answer to when I asked him about that question, because it's a fair assessment of their situation, being like, you must be so dead set and so confident that Caleb Williams is your guy, that you didn't bring anybody else into the building and he didn't take any other visits because he knows he's coming to Chicago.
Yeah.
Like, their process is, it's not like you only get that information from a top 30. I thought that Ryan Poles addressed that in a number of different ways where he said that they have like other networks inside the building that are responsible for researching and getting to know these other quarterbacks. And that there were several other players that they had high in their draft board that didn't come in for a top 30 that, you'd have to think if they're on the board and the Bears have an option to draft them, like that they would draft them.
Yeah.
It's just, it's, I just find it, I mean, we've heard of these stories. I've covered guys who you talk to and they're like, I didn't go on a visit to this team. And usually those are day three prospects, guys rounds 4 through 7,
right?
Who, you know, sometimes it's just like did you meet with this team at the combine? No, I didn't. Did you go on a top 30 visits are usually for, like, you know, it's kind of the notion of what a top 30 is, like the amount of visits you're allowed for, like, the top upper echelon of players, and they use their allotment on other positions to get several offensive linemen in here. We know about the top 3 receivers that were in here, and even beyond the top 3, Xavier Worthy was here as well. And then, of course, looking at the offensive line, like, they allocated those resources to positions where they felt they needed to have a wider array of players to evaluate versus the quarterback position. But if, you know, all of that's going to be something we talk about in retrospect, if their gamble, which doesn't feel like a gamble to them because they seem so dead set on the choices that they're making. Like, if those things don't pay off, though, that's going to be one thing that people, it might not be the only thing. It'd be one thing. Oh, like, well, if you guys just didn't, you know, if you weren't just, like, you know, eliminating the rest of the quarterback field by a certain point of the pre-draft process, maybe you wouldn't be in the situation. Like, for their sake, they hope that they never have to do that, but it will be, you know, it is, like, that will be talked about if indeed it plays out in a way that isn't how they foresee it going.
And I saw this too. This is not the Mitch situation, guys. I saw this on Twitter. It was like, didn't we do this with Mitch? Haven't we been down? This is not Mitch. We sent people to go look at Jaden Daniels. We sent people to go look at other quarterbacks that threw at their pro day. Mitch was like, cloak and dagger, that's my guy. Nobody's going to know it. We're draft day in this thing. That's what we're doing when we get there, right? Like, this is a completely different situation in totality, but they seem pretty convinced on their guy. And listen, if you've got the stones to pull off a move like this and you get the number one overall pick back-to-back years, I'm going to give you a lot of leeway. I'm going to give you a lot of trust in your evaluation of some of the NFL world that you're figuring out. Before we get up out of here, I do want to talk about the Bears apparently announcing tomorrow their plans for a new lakefront stadium. Courtney, is Arlington officially dead? Are the Bears all in on building in Chicago?
They are, and they've said as much over the last month that, you know, when news breaks that they're shifting their focus away from Arlington Heights and their sole focus is building a stadium south of the current Soldier Field site, like, this is the next step in showing how that's going to be done. Not only what the stadium's going to look like, what the museum campus is going to look like, but what that's going to require of taxpayer dollars to get that thing funded. We know that they've committed $2 billion of private funding to the stadium, but it's going to be a publicly owned stadium. So this is, like, the next step in answering a lot of the questions that people have. What am I as a taxpayer going to have to pay to get this thing for this thing to be built? What's going to be the financial burden that, you know, the city of Chicago is going to have to take on? All of those things, you're not going to come away with every answer tomorrow, but
right,
the majority of that is going to be the majority of, like, what that press conference is going to be are the renderings. You get to physically, or, you know, visualize it now. What does it look like? What's going to happen in the old Soldier Field site? Like, how is this going to work when there's such little real estate to work with around there outside of the South lot? And then when that happens, you get a chance to see, like, what's next. All right. How, like, what are the steps that this needs to take to get approved? And I know in my conversation with Kevin Warren from the one-on-one that I, or excuse me, from the piece that I wrote from a one-on-one I had with him at owners meetings, is that they're not thinking about the what ifs. They're not thinking about, like, well, what if Arlington Heights comes in and throws a Hail Mary? I just tend to think it would look really bad for this organization if after all of this, they end up going back to Arlington Heights. After all of the time and the resources spent to build a stadium in Chicago, yeah, like, shifting focus only to shift back, it just doesn't feel plausible for a number of different reasons now based on how they got here when both parties had every opportunity to make sure it didn't come to a point where it was an impasse. And then, like, I just feel like that just wouldn't just doesn't jive with where they're at right now and what we know about their process with trying to get the stadium built sooner rather than later, because that would just push the timeline back.
Does it feel at all like this is a failure on Kevin Warren coming in? Not to say you're not still going to get something done, but the reason that we brought you in was to facilitate and get a stadium that the Bears own and everything is in their favor and they don't have to deal with any of this mess of dealing with the city. And listen, I no Chicagoan is figured out how the traffic on this thing is going to work.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I'd like to know.
That's all we're all thinking about. Just like, where are these people going to park? But does this feel like maybe Kevin Warren dropped the ball here a little bit and now you've got to go back to the city of Chicago? And it doesn't mean you can't build a great stadium here, but there was a lot of perks at Arlington you don't get when you're downtown.
I don't believe that as much. I think, you know, it's not like they just ran back to the city of Chicago after the Arlington thing looked like it was, you know, dead in the water. They weren't going to budge on the tax proposal, all of that. They looked at 12 stadium sites. Like, we knew we would hear some of those names, some of the city names leak out, like everything from North Chicago to Aurora.
Yeah.
But this, I think it just feels, at least from how the Bears are positioning themselves, that if it wasn't going to be Arlington Heights, it's not going to be some other random suburb, because you're taking a charter franchise out of a city where it shares a namesake. Like, the priority in keeping the Bears here for the brand itself, and just also, like, there's so few charter, so few franchises left
that are in the city they're named after.
Yeah. Like, yeah. I mean, look at the 49ers. Like, they built that big stadium after they closed Candlestick 40 miles south of San Francisco. Right. Neither New York team plays in New York. Like, you know, Dallas, they play out like west of the city of Dallas, that they play in Arlington. Like, all of these major franchises, so few of these teams actually have stadiums in the city. And I do think that that's a big part of it, of keeping the Bears in Chicago. But, you know, I feel like you've got to, like, look at this and say, okay, this is the plan that they're going forward with. I think it would really take something pretty significant to throw them off course, where all of a sudden they're focusing back on Arlington Heights, or they're focusing on another city that pops up. Like, if it's either Chicago, or it's, you know, if it's not Arlington Heights, it's Chicago. And I just feel like finding that third, well, if it's not Chicago, where is it? Right. That's going to be very difficult. Like, I wouldn't even know where to start with that conversation, because they've positioned themselves in such a way politically, in dealing with, like, the different, like, you know, government entities of these different places, that you can't be flip-flopping back and forth. That's not a sign of a stable organization. That's not a way to get things done in a timely manner. And they know that. Kevin Warren dealt with this with Arden Hills in Minnesota when, like, the team was, you know, before the city came in, like, last minute, like, no, we're not letting them leave Minneapolis. Some of that's politics. Some of that is a negotiating tactic. But I feel like the negotiating tactics here have kind of run their course, and that this is, you know, if the place where they bought the land to build the stadium has not at this point come through with any sort of workaround to some of the issues that they had, if it's too little too late, they're not just going to, like, go back on it because they got some great offer. I wouldn't imagine.
Yeah. And listen, I the one thing that I love, I don't know if I think that this is a stain on Kevin Warren's resume. I think that he's still going to be able to build an amazing stadium down here. I have some questions on how logistics are going to work, how we're going to get to the stadium and different things like that. But I love the big ideas that come with it. But the one thing that I do love that Kevin Warren has done is he did not get strong-armed into a deal that he felt was not good for the Chicago Bears. And we haven't seen the Bears operate like that. We haven't seen the Bears be a team that's unwilling to back down to a city's demands. We haven't seen the Bears say, listen, you realize we're the Chicago Bears and we're a billion-dollar organization and we can do what we want to do with our money. And if that land is there, that land's there. Maybe we do something with it. Maybe we just resell it. I think a lot of Bears fans thought, once the land was bought, you're going to Arlington, because why would they waste it? And now seeing the Bears operate not as a mom and pop shop, but as a major billion-dollar business, it's refreshing. And I think it when you see that at the top, it does feel like everything else is falling into place underneath Kevin Warren. And it's what has me excited about upcoming seasons and I guess a stadium staying in Chicago.
Yeah, and I mean, for them to announce this during draft week, like the timing itself is, you know, you've got all this other stuff going on with the draft. Like you'd think like, okay, maybe they would want to like wait until the draft is over next week, and then they can get more eyeballs on them when, you know, it's kind of a quiet time before rookie minicamp start up. But no, they're going all in on like everything, like two top 10 draft picks, announcing the plans for what it's going to look like for them to stay in Chicago. There's just a lot going on. And I don't think that that's like, you know, coincidental. I think that they're doing that by design based on like trying to position themselves for Thursday night to be the talk of the NFL, which they're going to be, and they've have been.
Yeah. It's going to be a lot of fun. Can't wait for, I mean, listen, it all starts tomorrow. Plans unveil tomorrow, draft Thursday, draft Friday. Like there's so much coming for the Bears this week. We're going to keep you guys locked in with all of it right here on the Chicago Bears podcast. So make sure that you're tuned in with us, hit that subscribe button and hit that notification bell so that you get notified every single time we drop a video over here at ESPN Chicago. And of course, stay tuned in with us on the podcast side. For Courtney Cronin, I'm Pat the Designer, back at it again. Y'all stay safe out there, Chicago. Appreciate you guys for showing love. Bear down. I guess we'll figure out where to park later. Peace.